their problems are always evolving based on how, you know, their business is changing, the influences around them, their personal circumstances. Your customer needs are always changing. And so innovation never stops. If innovation only stops when problems stop to exist.
This product, oh my God. Better Product, the only show that takes a behind the scenes look into how digital products are created,
the business is built around them, and how you too can innovate better product.
I'm Christian.
I'm Anna.
Welcome to today's show. Happy New Year, Anna.
Same to you, Christian. I can't believe that we are a full year into this podcast. I am really excited to kick things off in 2020 with a new series.
All right, so let's do it. As we talked with product leaders on the show last year, it seemed like a common theme was the challenges that come during and after an acquisition.
That's right. Whether you've been acquired or have acquired another company, there are a number of complexities that come with managing products and understanding what your product team looks like on the other side. So for the next four episodes, we are digging into what it looks like to manage products through an acquisition.
Anna, why do you think this was such an important theme for us to focus on?
We talk a lot about how startups and kind of scale-ups innovate on their products, come up with new features. But I think there are a lot of companies out there, you know, growing by acquisition. And so kind of representing those stories, I think will give us another view into what it's like to innovate via acquisition, not just from a product side, but I think there's a huge impact to the team as well.
Yeah, I think even some, we talked to Rod Foyer from Costello, and they were acquired by SalesLoft. So he was speaking from the perspective of growing Costello, and now he's probably dealing with some of those challenges of having to integrate upward into those. So I think it's good to cover these because for product leaders, you might be on one side acquiring products, but you might also be on the acquired side and figuring out how to still be successful in a larger company.
So what are you hoping to learn through the course of this?
I want to understand how, I guess that maybe the day-to-day job of a product manager changes when there's multiple products at play. It's almost like you go from a product manager to a portfolio manager, or you're a product manager that then has to talk to other product manager leads to figure out how you roll up into a larger vision. So I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's a great point. I would imagine it's a similar process of looking at, is this feature right for our product, as in, is this product right for our portfolio?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. All right, so we're going to get started today by speaking with someone who has lived it. In 2017, Indianapolis-based company Interactive Intelligence was acquired by Genesys. Genesys offers a customer experience solution focused on driving great business outcomes and creating lasting relationships. Through their acquisition of Interactive Intelligence, Genesys was able to integrate their Interaction Center platform into their existing portfolio of customer communication technologies. To get an understanding of what it looked like for Interactive Intelligence's products and the product teams themselves to go through this transition, we spoke with Genesys Vice President of Product Management, Mimi Nguyen.
Mimi started at Interactive Intelligence around 15 years ago, giving her a unique perspective on the acquisition and the changes that took place. We're going to start off by having Mimi describe the early challenges faced after the acquisition, specifically what it was like to go from having a team localized in one city to working with a team that spanned time zones. Let's listen in.
Shifting from your role, Interactive Intelligence, based in Indianapolis, gets acquired by Genesys. I would like to understand how your role changed and how new challenges emerged when that happened. Or was it all just the same with a different brand?
It's not the same. So we became Interactive Intelligence at the end of 2016 had two major product lines. And then when we merged with Genesys, we became a much larger company with more products, different development styles, right? Different product management methodologies. And so we had the problems of just generally like defining, okay, what does our new business look like? How do we go to market? Where do these products sit relative to each other? How much investments do we give each? Blah, 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 blah. The challenge around the people was actually a hard one, because Indianapolis or Interactive Intelligence was pretty much centered in Indy. We had four buildings here. The vast majority of the development staff is here. The product managers were here. The sales staff, support, PS, everyone was here. And then we became much more distributed and much more global. So learning how to collaborate and work remotely across time zones was challenging. Having the same taxonomy and language to describe what we do and our products was, you know, another challenge.
Across all the products?
Well, yeah, you need to harmonize across all the products. And product management and product development styles differ. And, you know, we're in a business that we do M&As fairly frequently. So, I mean, that's always changing, right? It's always like, okay, we've got a new development team in. How do we take the best of what they do, incorporate into what we do, and then, you know, vice versa and harmonize across?
When you first had the big acquisition, did you prioritize this harmonizing? Was that a strategy or is it something that happened over time? Meaning like it was the first order of business in 2017. It's like our main focus this year is getting taxonomy correct and making sure everything's aligned. Or was that something that sort of happened organically over time as you started, you know, collaborating with the other teams?
There were definitely a few things that we established early on. We did establish a taxonomy of the products just so that as an organization, we could communicate in a more consistent fashion back to the business around, you know, how do we go to market, what we're actually going to be delivering to our customers. We definitely established our preliminary thinkings around go-to-market strategy and positioning of the products, target customers and market segments and verticals.
So now I feel like Genesis is kind of on the other side of like a major acquisition. So now it seems like you have an M&A machine. I'd like to understand a little bit about that and how do you figuring out how to take the best of an acquiring product? Because it seems like it would be a mistake for companies in your position to just always assume that you just need to fold into the mix and do things our way. Or is that the best way? I don't know. Maybe I should stop. I don't know. I don't oversee product management.
I would hope that there are no companies out there that ever say, my way is the best way, or it's the highway.
So how do you manage that without accruing, you know, dozens of products that are all operating slightly differently in your organization? How do you figure out which ones to take from, which ones to like push your process and pull?
It's a lot of observation first. You certainly don't want to disrupt businesses. So you want to keep them, you know, business as usual. And then if you see something that is extremely problematic or extremely good, those are the ones that you start to surface and then collaboratively say, okay, how do we fix this? We see good examples of addressing the problems by doing this. Does this work for your business or for your department? Or, you know, like, hey, this team is rocking and rolling, and these are the outputs that they're delivering. Here's some key learnings from them. Can we incorporate that more broadly across the organization?
So I want to stop and discuss something that Mimi shared there, because it seemed like there's a very fine line between maintaining business as usual and identifying problems that are almost certainly going to surface. Anna, you're big on team collaboration. I'm curious what your thoughts are on looking at the product management from a team standpoint, both from thinking about like remote collaboration versus local, or just how you merge teams from two different products together.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's one of those things that, again, because we haven't really talked much about this issue, we've never really had to discuss. But the idea of bringing in not only a whole new product, a whole new feature, but a whole new product team, and that means a whole different culture, a whole different way of working, and even potentially, you know, maybe I don't know who's not agile anymore, but maybe they're not agile. Maybe they're a waterfall team. Maybe they're a Wagile team. You heard it here, folks.
Maybe a Wagile team.
That being said, I can imagine that would be a really a challenge there. Christian, in your experience and, you know, with the kind of the teams that you've worked with, how do you feel like people can reconcile some of these different product management processes or methodologies?
I think it's a challenge because when you're a large company, you get really efficient. So if you acquire products, there's a good reason to sort of bring them into your process. It's how you got there. On the flip side, I think you have to be aware of the type of product that you're acquiring. If it's a different type of product, if it has, you know, maybe a different market or a different way of operating, if it has a different pricing model, if it's a different subscription model, those are all reasons you might start thinking about separating the two. You don't just want to have one template for the way all of your products should work and make all acquisitions fit, you also need to be aware of what's different about the products that are coming in, and should we be being influenced by them, or should we let them sort of run on their own?
Let's go back to our conversation with Mimi, as she shares her learnings from managing multiple product lines and gives her insight into what it means to stay innovative within your core products. We've talked to a lot of people who run products. We have not talked to many people who run multiple product lines and how that relates to the organization. So I'd love to have you kind of take us through. You mentioned that that's not how you're structured today, but that's how you're moving. So like how at Genesis are you managing these multiple product lines, and then how does that relate to the product organization?
Yeah, well, we've actually just recently structured that way. So, you know, Genesis has multiple products. So we've defined the products that go into our transformative side of the business, as well as the products that define the core of the business. So these are well-established products that drive, you know, have the most customers, they're the most mature, they are, you know, they are the ones that fund the rest of the business. And then, you know, we have that other business then too that I said was transformative, where, you know, this is where we're doing a lot of iterations and testing and validation of the market and trying to create like growth drivers for the company. So we've already organized around that. But if you think about those two types of business units, you can start to see how product teams have to change, right, to fit one or the other, at least the mentality behind how you develop and think about what you should be investing in and organizing your people around.
So you have the transformative side, and then what do you call the like the more
it was core.
The core. Okay,
you call the core okay. Part of the business.
So how do you define those teams? And so obviously the transformative side, they're like pushing, they're iterating. I assume they're getting things out, getting things to customers, as opposed to the core side who are kind of like keeping the, train running. Is that the
well,
the
you know, part? And I don't want people to think that the core side isn't innovating.
Oh, no, not at
all. They absolutely are. So the transformative side, it's really what we're saying is like the growth engine. So how do you run that business in a way that is going to help keep you really ahead of the competitors, right? And start to drive growth, whether that's new logos, new customers, new bookings, or, you know, trying to test out new types of products to take to the market, you know, testing some hypotheses around innovation, right? Seeing like what sticks. That's that side of the business. Now, the core business, this is the business that is so important. These are the products that are so important for the business to keep that steady revenue coming in. Okay, so you've got to say, okay, what do I need here to take care of my existing customers? Because you are probably a business that values customer loyalty, right? And you want to maintain customers as long as you can and keep them happy. So your focus then as a product manager, I think, really starts to shift around your customers, your current customers in this model. Whereas in the transformative side of the business, or, you know, this incubation zone, you're looking at, you know, the broader market in general. You're kind of more focused on what competitors are doing, what new technologies are coming out. You're looking at like white spaces.
I want to understand a little bit more about the core. I think Anne and I both in our previous careers have worked on core business. Also, I've been a part of projects that were sort of like new markets with large companies when I was at Autodesk. So I'm definitely familiar with it, but I'm curious from your perspective, overseeing products, you said that on the core side of the business, it's about maintaining customer loyalty. So, but innovation also still happens there. And I think a lot of times people feel like core business or legacy and innovation are like, what's the word?
Oil and water?
Yes, oil and water. They don't mix. They're like, what's the word when things are like oxymoron? Oxymoron, right?
Mutually exclusive. It's like jumbo shrimp.
It's like innovative core business is an oxymoron. Oh, or something yeah. Like that.
Define innovation.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you to do.
Hey, you're in the hot seat here.
This is your interview. Well, I was curious though, because when we were describing, you have the two sides of core and transformative. You said the core side of the business is still innovative. So I was trying to understand in your mind, what does that mean with a more mature product line?
your customers are always changing. Okay. Their problems are always evolving based on how, you know, their business is changing, the influences around them, their personal circumstances. Your customer needs are always changing. And I think you guys know this really well, right? You are always having to do user research. And so innovation never stops. If innovation only stops when problems stop to exist.
Has it ever happened anywhere?
I don't know.
No.
No.
I'll have to do some research and fact check that.
Mm-mm. And there's always ways to do things
better.
So
you're saying that the core side of the business, although the transformative side is like you said, there's like white spaces and like I would assume leapfrogging competitors, the core business still has to be innovating because the customers are changing. And to keep them happy and to keep them loyal, you have to move with them.
That's exactly right.
Or just maybe a little bit ahead of them.
So is there any relationship in your mind? I know this is a recent shift for Genesis, but do you envision or do you have an idea of the way that core product teams and the transformative ones would interact, or are they sort of treated completely distinctly from each other?
No, there's a contribution between the two teams. So if you are structured in a way where you're protecting the core business, but then you're also protecting the transformation side of the business, you should expect that they're contributing to each other. So if the transformation team goes, hey, we've developed something that we believe is going to stick, then I'm going to want to bring that back into the core part of the business if it makes sense to. So I have to open up my teams to start collaborating, right, to make sure that we're feeding the inputs of our customers back to this transformative team, and then also then bringing that innovation back so that we can provide it to our existing customers.
So product management is a very complex role. We talked about a little bit about that in the beginning. Do you feel like there are different types of product managers for transformational versus core business? Or is it more of how do you know what PMs would be better in each side? Or is it just either?
I think there's definitely similarities in characteristics, regardless of what industry or what type of business that you're running. You just may flex one muscle more than the other. Product managers need to have really good proficiencies in the product itself, right? You've got to be an SME in the product, really understand its function, its use, the capabilities. You have to have a very good understanding of the customers, potential customers or existing customers that are going to be using the product, their needs. You know, have empathy for these customers, bring that back into the organization, be able to share their problems to the rest of the org. You have to have really good business acumen, because at the end of the day, if you don't sell your product, it's not necessarily a successful product, and you are going to have to make these trade-off decisions for the business. What do we invest in? What do we not invest in? What is the, you know, cost of delay or the cost of not doing something? And then you have to have proficiency in the market. So what is happening in your market? What are your competitors doing? How is the landscape changing? And then not just your market, but also understand your market adjacencies. Because there may be a time and place for you to expand horizontally, right? So that's a lot to ask for. Can I say they need to be like superheroes, superhumans?
Sure. We already believe that. But that's a good point. And the complexity of a PM, it's a complex role that you can't go to school for. I mean, there's some schools popping up, there's training programs, but nobody goes to college to be a PM. They all just kind of come out and learn on the job. So how do you train somebody to do all of this really, really complex job that's constantly changing and shifting as trends and markets move?
Yeah. If you are already a well-established organization, the best thing that you can do, and you already have good product managers, is to have a mentorship program, right? To show these new PMs some of the best practices and activities that are done in your org. But you should also, as part of your interview practice, be like understand the qualities, good qualities of a product manager, not necessarily, you know, how deep they are in those four disciplines that I just talked about, because you can learn those over time. But good product managers, in my opinion, already come with the ability to, first of all, be curious, like be really curious about problems, how people feel, what people are doing, have this mindset of, always being a student. And that's how I would characterize myself. Like if I was to get a tattoo of it, of anything, I have no tattoos, I'd probably get the phrase "Ancora Imparo" tattooed on me, which is an Italian phrase by Michelangelo that roughly translates to "still I am learning." Because I think the moment that you start to walk into situations with customers and feel like you already know the solution, right? Feel like you're already an expert, then you start closing your mind to innovating and the possibilities of how to solve the problem better. Or, you just start solutioning.
So, yeah, and I think you as a case study in this is good. Because Anna was talking about how they don't, I mean, there's some schools for product management, but even at your level, at your role, you wouldn't necessarily know how to grow. You'd still have to grow into that. You can't go, well, you could go get degrees for everything you need, but it wouldn't make any sense. You wouldn't spend like 12 years in college just like sequentially getting an MBA, human computer interaction design degree, and then join the workforce after 10 years. Well, maybe somebody could try. So your journey kind of started a while back when it was interactive intelligence, right? And you kind of grew into this role. So it might be helpful to hear how that happened for you.
Yeah. So I started at Interactive probably close to 15 years ago in the services organization. So I led a global team of engineers who were responsible for supporting our business intelligence line of products. I also helped to establish professional services practices around BI, establish consulting practices, some of the programs there. And so I was in front of customers all day, every day.
So how did that first leap happen as you started to move into product management?
So because I was in front of the customers all the time and I was developing this practice, you know, my team just became really known as, you know, people who were really good at their jobs, who really understood what the customers wanted, who developed really good solutions and services for the customers. And that gave me an opportunity to step into to product management. And I think being in a role, a customer service role up front was really key to becoming a really good product manager, right? Because I already had the muscles for listening. Right, I already had the muscles for being in front of a customer and listening to their problems before designing a solution.
What was the most challenging part of that transition for you?
Prioritization, right? Because you want to do everything you can for the customer. You want to solve every single problem, and you run into the typical constraints: time, money, capabilities.
How does it feel when you have a customer who is like, I need X and it's super important for me, and you know that it's on the roadmap, it just hasn't been as highly prioritized? Like, what was that like for you kind of initially?
It is hard to say no. And you know many product managers, and that is the word that they probably say the most is no. So that is definitely another muscle that needs to learn to be flexed.
Is there a way to learn how to get better at saying no as a product manager?
Yeah, you follow it by the word but. No, but here's what else we're doing to help improve your situation. So I know you want this particular feature, but we also recognize that you have these other additional problems and we're going to be solving them for you. So here are the benefits. No, but we can connect you with our consulting team or a professional services team to see how they can assist in solving that problem for you. No, but I have a partner ecosystem and community that we could reach out to see if there's something out there that could assist you during this time.
Wow.
I'm convinced.
I am too. I am very excited about
I believe that you will solve all my problems. So perfect.
Well, I think it's interesting too, with all the examples you just gave of like how many different avenues for solution you gave. It was like customer support, it could be in the product roadmap. Like it seems like it's not just getting better at saying no, but it's almost like a PM should, I don't know, maybe it like the PM needs to like understand all the different ways of solving problems at their disposal. It's not just like your engineering team.
That's exactly right.
I think a lot back to what you were saying initially, where you feel like one of the kind of changes that you've seen is that the product experience goes beyond the product. It's the every interaction. I think it's interesting that you see those as other solutions, again, beside the specific feature. It's the customer support. It's the product. It's the, like you said, the partner ecosystem.
Exactly. And if I'm going to say no, but, and then recommend a path, I want that path to be a viable path for them. I want to know that that professional services team has, they understand the product, that they have services wrapped around the product to fill the needs of the customer. I want to know that that support team, that at least I've done everything in my power as a product manager to enable the support team to do their job well.
What does better product mean to you?
Better product means that it's a product that is incrementally improving and in a way that is changing with the customer's needs. You should be building a product that you envision a lifespan for, where the customer, you know, takes it on their journey with them through life.
Our thanks to Mimi for taking the time to speak with us about her experience at Genesis and what she learned during the acquisition. On our next episode, we'll be exploring what it means to maintain product, brand, and internal alignment during an acquisition and hear from some key voices who have their own insights into how to make it happen.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.